And now, let's welcome tonight's speaker, Sharon C.
Hi, I'm Sharon, alcoholic. It's nice to see everybody tonight. Thank you, Denny, for this privilege. I haven't been here a while, and it's great to see people that are still sober, active, and that I love. And it's all about the love. I drank in the 60s, and it wasn't just say no, it was just say thanks. So there was a lot of other stuff going on. So we had a lot of fun in the 60s. And I got sober August 20th, 1975, and I didn't know that was going to be my sobriety date, and I had no idea that I was going to get a brand new life. And I know there's a lot of hands that went up for under a year, and quite a few under 30 days. So I hope you're not feeling very good if you're here under 30 days. It's a good place to start if you're feeling bad. I don't think you rolled out of bed with everything going your way and said, I think I'll go to AA tonight. Takes a little desperation, takes a little bit of, it takes a miracle to get us in the seats of Alcoholics Anonymous, truly, because many people don't make it here. They say, if you're new, they say that 10 people's lives have changed for the better since you walked in the room. So if you're new, it's not about you. It's about those 10 other people. And could be your mother, your sister, could be your dad. Doesn't have to worry about, you can go to the movies because the bail bondsman's not going to call. You know, your mother maybe will sleep at night because she knows you're safe with us. And maybe the children are happier and things have changed because you walked into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. So right away, the power of being in Alcoholics Anonymous affects a lot of people. I think the greatest gift that I've been given in my sobriety is a spiritual awakening. I was always the little girl in Iowa looking for the mothership, and I drank a lot of alcohol because it made me feel like I was an alien, proud of it, and someday I would find my people. And when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, the speaker, I don't remember much about the meeting, but the speaker did say he waited for the spaceship to land and say, you can come home now, Bill. So that was my hook, my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just thought, I found spaceship people. And I think I'm right, but I've had an incredible life in 39 years. I've made a lot of amends. I've found a brand new God here. I've been able to know that my surrender on a daily basis is very important. And another one of the tenets of Alcoholics Anonymous is being humbled. And I am humbled every single day of my life that I have the privilege to be a member of AA and have sobriety. And I also know that I can't do this alone, so I keep coming back. If I could do this alone, I'd sit in my room and read the big book and just have a great life. But me and me alone with a big book is good for a little while. And then I need God with skin on, so I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I can sit with you and see your miracles. Because I see yours a lot quicker than I see my own, that's for sure. There's words in the book like transformed by happiness. Our real purpose. It gives us so much tools in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, how to live life. And I always read page 25 because it calms me down that there's a solution. Because I go out in the world, like today was one of those days. I had to call my neighbor because I wasn't very awake to the world. I said, can you please see? I don't think I closed my garage door because I was thinking. So I had to call my neighbor, and he emailed me back. He said, your garage door is closed, so I don't even remember doing it. And it was kind of, my husband used to have what they called, drive any way you want Thursday. And today was one of those drive any way you want Thursdays. I just had to let everybody do what they wanted to do, when they wanted to do it. And since my real purpose is on page 77, to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me, that means I have to let you turn left if you want to turn left. That means if you want to get in, I get to let you in. So it was one of those days where I was trying to be useful and purposeful and not just give it to the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, my kindness and my smile, but to the world. And I certainly was one of those girls that didn't want to live in the world. I liked I liked Everclear. I liked White Lightning. I liked Canadian Club and VO. And then there was Jack Daniels and Smirnoff and into tequila, which was my favorite. And I did a lot of Chapter 3, and I arrived in one piece to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my first god in AA was a Beacons truck, you know, the big moving vans, Beacons moving vans. And because it made sense, because it was like a beacon of light, you know, I'm new, right? So I'm figuring all this out in my squirrely head. It was like a beacon of light, and God kind of got me to where I'm supposed to go, to an AA meeting in one of those like little moving quilty blankets, you know, and he kind of brought me here and shoved me off the truck. And so I prayed to Beacons for a long time. It just seemed to work. And my son texted me a picture this week. He's back east and he saw a Beacons truck and sent me a picture. And he's 30 now and not an alcoholic, but I guess some things did seep in at somewhere along the line that was kind of funny. But that's how I got here. I had disappointed my mom, my dad. I had broken their hearts. I basically ran alone. I had a backpack with a book, Be Here Now by Baba Ram Dass. I didn't know anything about it. I went to college. I slid my art talent across the bar someday when the bartender said, well, if you're going to drink and go down this path, you got to pay with your art talent. Fine, take it. Somewhere along the line, you know, I could play music, take it. I want my alcohol because alcohol transformed me. Alcohol was my spiritual solution. Alcohol allowed me to quit seeking. I'm a seeker. I was born a seeker, looking for my mothership or whatever it was, and the alcohol filled that spiritual hole for a while. So I kept going back to it because I needed filling. You know, I needed it. I'm one of four children, and I'm the only alcoholic, the only divorcee. I mean, I've got a whole big line of how I'm different from everybody in my family. But alcohol did something different for me than my best friend that drank it with me. Alcohol allowed me to be courageous, have that instant courage. And, you know, I was thinking the other day when I was, I attended bar in New Orleans. It was a great place to live if you're drinking. And I remember the night that, oh, I know what it was, I saw a country and western, somebody country and western had died recently, and there was a song called For the Good Times. Oh, God. By Ray Price. He just died a little while ago. And, oh, my God, I'm not a country girl, but, boy, when they played that song For the Good Times, I was working at this bar on Bourbon Street. I was drinking, and when I listened to that song, I started to drink gin. And when I drink gin, it's kind of scary because I get sad, I get maudlin. I'm usually one of those people that's up and going and let's move in the middle of the night and that's great. Where are we going? What's your name? So there I am in this bar and I locked the door and kicked everybody out because they weren't with me on this with this song. And I was playing. I was laying on the bar drinking the good stuff, you know, the Tanqueray, playing B5 over and over and over again. It's Friday night on Bourbon Street. It's 10, 11 at night. Of course, the owner gets called. Your bar's closed. What's going on? You're losing money, you know. And so there's Mike at the door knocking. Please let me in. Please let me in. Nobody understands. And I'm just going on and on about this song For the Good Times and just with it. And it's over. And, you know, I'm like, what, 23 years old? And my life is over. And so I opened up and he, you know, rolled me in the back and gave me some more to drink and let me pass out. I didn't lose my job. I mean, it was just like, okay, we'll take care of her and she'll be back tomorrow night in good shape. And I was. And so that's, I'm not pretending anymore. My address is Bourbon Street. I live on Bourbon Street. I'm not trying to be, you know, a magna cum laude. I'm not trying to be, you know, my dad's favorite. I'm not trying to be anything but what I am, which is I love drinking and I am here and this is, and the rest of you people don't get it. You don't get it. I mean, we used to laugh at the tourists and we used to like have to pay our light bill and it was like if we have to leave the quarter, you go pay your light bill at the last minute before they close in a taxi and come back to the bar and they go, oh, you made it. And we celebrate. We celebrated, you know, paying your light bill. We celebrated feelings. We've celebrated, you know, people that lived, people that died. As I went down the path of alcoholism, though, my mother didn't know where I was much of the time. You know, I woke up with things like, blood on me and not being mine. I have a powder burn on my leg I don't remember getting. My friend was shot and killed on Mardi Gras Day in 1975. I landed in Palm Springs General Hospital July 27th, 1975 with a broken jaw, broken nose, thrown out of a car, concussion. You know, they had their way with me and then left me by the side of the road. And up until that point, I was truly defending the way I was going to live, and nobody understands, and who cares, and I can't go home, and they don't know how to talk to me. I had been very, very sick physically, and the doctor looked at me like, what's wrong with you? But at that time, I was organic and living on an organic farm, so I told him I was organic, and he said, you shouldn't look like this. Your gallbladder's not working. You have pancreatitis. You're 21 years old, and I didn't even think of alcohol. Alcohol was my solution. In fact, those organic people stayed organic because I drank. They didn't want me in their organic community. And I was also in a commune on Huntington Beach once, and they asked me to leave because I was the drinker. Hey, just smoke this. No. Guys are not fun at all. Who likes sitting around going, let's party? You know, let's move. And I just couldn't understand it because I marched to my own drummer. I had my heart broken by my fiancé, and so that was it. I'm not going to open that heart up again. So I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, broken, living above the Duck Pond Liquor Store, which used to be on Palms and Overland. And my jaw's wired shut. I'm so bruised I can't even touch my face for 6 months. I was a mess. And I'm with a guy who had felt sorry for me that I had met at Barney's Beanery. And he would buy me cheap red wine, go off to work every morning, and I wouldn't screw the top, stick a straw in it, stick a straw through the wires on my face where the tooth had been kicked out, and drink my wine. And there was no more fun in it. There was no more, let's go to Arizona. They have drive-through liquor stores. You know, that was what I was shooting for, maybe. And maybe I would have had a plan on August 21st, but on August 20th, he looked at me and he said, you have to leave, you're depressing me. And I had nowhere to go. Nowhere to go. And that was the beauty of my day to get to you. And each one of us had that day. That day, that special day that we just picked up the next breadcrumb because it was the only thing we could see. That led to the next breadcrumb, that led to the next breadcrumb that got me into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous that night. And my mother, I called my mother, and my mother said she couldn't send me any money and I should go to the Salvation Army. And my mother didn't know for 2 nights if her daughter was going to be okay because she didn't know what hospital I was in. But my mom finally said no. She's never been to Al-Anon. And so I end up in an AA meeting where I hear that, and I'm so tired and so surrendered, I just do what they do. And we go to 2 meetings a day, and they say, don't drink and use in between, and we'll pick you up tomorrow. And then they gave me a sleeping bag, and I slept on floors, and that was my beginning here. And I was wired up for the first 3 months I was here. I couldn't talk. I had to learn to listen. People would walk up to me and tell me everything they wanted to tell me, and I couldn't say anything back. They did give me a cup washing commitment. I've always had commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember they put the ashtrays and the cups all in the same sink, and I just stood there like, oh my God, there's ashes with the cups. And I mean, I couldn't move, and somebody walked behind me. I think it was Pat Hodges, and she said, wash. So, you know, so that's how it was for me in the beginning. And I had no place to stay. I had to go back to court. They had caught these two people that had done this to me. It was just, I was a victim. I was a legitimized victim. It was on paper. It was like, yes, you know, that's what I was shooting for, was victim. And about 7 years of sobriety, I had an awakening, and I didn't want to be that victim anymore. I wanted to be God's kid, and I have grown into being God's kid here with the process of the steps, being sponsored always and sponsoring. I've had Janet N. was my first sponsor. She's not sober today. 5 years that woman took me through my first marriage, my first inventory, my first amends to my family, right up until I went to the International Convention in New Orleans of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1980, where I got to make a lot of amends. And you know what? They didn't hear what I said. It was just how you had cleaned me up. Because it was out in the quarter. They were, oh my God, you should see what the ANA has done with Mama Cher. She looks great. And that's all they saw, was how you had cleaned me up and put a light in my eyes. So I got to make a lot of amends, and a couple of my comrades are sober today, 30 years each. And we drank together, and we don't live in the same states, but we stay sober together. We talked, and we're, you know, it's amazing that the three of us were plucked from that insanity of alcoholism and darkness, and we get to, it's almost like you just get plucked from your life and thrown into a cool pool. You know, here we are. Where am I? I'm at A&A. I didn't really understand where I was. I had seen the big book in a bar once. Somebody had it, and she was too drunk to drive to go to A&A. So the bartender called her a taxi and took away her keys so she wouldn't get another DUI. So we cheered her out the door. Go for you, go to A&A. And little did I know about it at all. And I'm the blessed. I have so many blessings since I've been here. It's work. You know, you have to take the steps, and you have to have a lot of come on midnight days sometimes in the beginning. And you have to hang on to your seat. And Janet was really good at spotting things with me because she was crazy. I didn't realize it until later on down the road, but Janet was crazy. So to stay sane and live in the world, she had to do everything in Alcoholics Anonymous, right in the middle, and that's what she taught me. She taught me to stay right in the middle, and that's where I've been for 39 years, is right in the middle. Because I'm spoiled now. I like being awake. I like having joy. I like being able to see your life change. I like sitting with you. I like being with you. I like being in the world. I like to meet other God's kids, and that's what it is. I'll go out in the day, and I'll just smile at people. You know, I'll just smile at people, just to smile at people. At my lunch hour, I'll just go take a walk and smile at people, and most people smile back. And sometimes they smile at me first now, and that's kind of scary, like, ooh. You know, it's like the time that Sister Sheila asked me to be her sponsor, a nun, you know. It's like when people are smiling at me, and like when Sheila asked me to be her sponsor, it was like, she's talking to me, and I think they're smiling at me. But now I have the days where I'm not going to smile because I'm just mad at the world. And my, you know, my meditation wasn't so great today, and I'm kind of like that, you know, those little monkeys that they trap down in South America. You know, I'm not going to let go of my rice. You know, they put these little coconuts, they carve out a little place to put their hand in, and they put their little hands in on these little trails in between their visiting their friends. And these little monkeys just, there's rice in that coconut. They put their little hands in and they grab the rice. And they won't let go. You know, so the people just come along and pick them up and put them in a cage and bring them up here so people can have pet monkeys and put diapers on them or something. You know, and you want to scream at them, let go of the rice. There's more rice somewhere. Run. You know, I'm not letting go. And today was kind of one of those rice days with my emotions. I didn't want to let go. And but that's okay, because I'm on to me. I'm on to me. I'm the biggest entertainment I've got. And if you're not laughing at yourself, you're missing the biggest joke of all, really. Because we are the lucky ones. We go throw a stone, you're going to find an alcoholic that will die a horrible alcoholic death. It's not pretty. It's not pretty. There's somebody in Las Vegas I know right now that's in an induced coma because of the DTs. And I don't know if he's going to make it. You know, I don't know if he's going to make it. Because that happens. And it's a killer, deadly disease. But how did these two alcoholics get together, Bob and Bill? And how did this all happen? And if you read the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's pretty darn miraculous that it all came together. The stars had to align, and things had to happen way back when, starting with Carl Jung, you know, way back when, to this meeting on Mother's Day they had in 1935, Bill and Bob. It's phenomenal. If one little peg would be moved, we wouldn't be here with this most amazing recovery program of joy. And that's where my awakening has gotten to me. And my sponsorship was with a woman named Ginny Gates, and many of you knew her. She used to come to this meeting a lot. And Ginny had me pay my dad back the money I owed him. Ginny was smarter than me, quicker than me, more prettier than me. She just commanded it. And she taught me how to be soft and womanly, and she had me make amends to my dad financially. And it was like, oh, how did she know that was going to change everything? Because she's been down the road. You're right. There's no opinions. It's experience. It's experience. And she shared her experience with me, and she had the hope that things were going to change for me. So much so that she had me not just send my dad the money on time every month. And by the way, he had come out to my wedding, read the big book, ran a calculator tape, was ready for me with the amount when I called. So my dad's a reader and a businessman. So when I called him, he was ready for me, and I was resentful. And she said, it's his money, and let's just do it. And send a note about your life. Are you willing to grow through this with your dad? She said, willing to grow through this with my dad. My dad has a Mensa older sister, me, Nurse Sally in Alaska. He loves Alaska, and his son is a doctorate. So there you go. So she said, send him about your life. So I would tell him about the jail panels. I would tell him about some people I was sponsoring, you know, thinking, oh, he's just going to go let Sharon, you know. But the check was on time, and the note and the card all went together for almost 5 years. Almost 5 years, on time. Ginny always would check, did you send it on time with the note? So my dad called me between Christmas and New Year's, and he said, Merry Christmas, Sharon, I don't want your money anymore. And he didn't want my money anymore. I was ready to keep sending it. But he said the words that Ginny knew could happen that I didn't think would happen. He said, I don't want your money anymore, but don't stop sending me your notes. And, you know, things have been better with me and Dad, I realized. And they continue to be better. And he was killed in 1999 instantly. And we were good. We were very good. So, such a smart sponsor. She was so smart. You know, many of you know she went to Paris and smoked some pot and came back with 21 days instead of 21 years. And I was scared and my marriage was falling apart and my husband was having an affair in the room. And nobody got custody of the meetings. It wasn't much fun. I had this little baby boy, and you know, I hated everybody, and I sat with my arms folded in the front of the room with my legs kicked out and thought, walk over me, you know. And my husband had gotten into punk rock, so I had this big, we used to go to Cramps concerts, yeah, I know, sober, and I would stand by the wall going, oh, mosh pit, been there, done that, don't, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. But I would try to go with my husband to what he was enjoying. I'd wake up to the record Fear in the morning. You know, and he was just, he was getting crazier and crazier. But he moved out, he had the affair, moved out, they had a baby. But I sat in that front row with my legs kicked out going, walk over me. And I'd wear my Midol shirt I had made when we would go to the Cramps concert. So people were looking at me kind of strange. Sharon's got 10 years. Do you want what she's got? Pat Hodges said that. I heard her. Sharon's got 10 years. Do you want what she's got? Oh, it's made me so mad. I did an inventory. I went to Clancy. I read my inventory. I gave up the keys to the car. I was going to drive his car down to Venice Beach at low tide. I mean, I had lots of plans. But I had this little child I was raising. I was sponsoring people. A lot of them jumped ship, but I was sponsoring the really crazy people that would get in the car and go with me 5 hours to a meeting. We're going to a meeting. Where are we going? Sacramento, you know. I stayed in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. Can we stop to go to the bathroom? No, no peeing. In the car. Hold it, you know. God, it was so mean. My son looked up at me one day and said, you're a mean mom. And I thought, oh, my God, it broke me. I called Clancy. He said, that's a mean mom. He said, what does he like to do? What does he play with? Legos. Okay, then make Lego time. So I had to have Lego time. You know, and then they got married, had a baby and all that jazz. And, you know, I'd pick him up at her house and he'd tell me everything she did for him. And I had to bite my tongue, and I still have scars on my tongue. I couldn't say anything about them. And I hated her. I hated her. I didn't wish her drunk, but I hated her. Last Monday, she gave me a cake for 39 years at my women's meeting. And it's not all that easy. He left her for somebody else, so, you know. We bonded over that. But, see, Clancy caught me one night on my way with two hot cups of coffee. This is sober, trying to see how happy they would be with hot coffee down them at this meeting. It's a big meeting. And so what he did was he took the coffee out of my hands, he put it on the table, he squared me off, and he looked in my eyes and he said, you will walk through this with dignity and grace. And if he would have stopped there, I would have said, I want revenge. I don't care about dignity and grace. But those sponsors. Always add those words that you hear so you can be an example to others. Bill and Bob, oh my God, they're watching, you know. So I had to leave him alone. And so when he left her a few years later, she said, I knew I could do it because I'd been watching you. So guess what? My purpose, page 77, is to fit myself, which is a lot of work every day, to be of maximum service. Not minimum, going to be inconvenienced, right? Going to go the extra mile, right? To God, first of all, and to the people about us. And it doesn't say everybody except Jill, you know, the ex-wife. No, I have to be an example for everybody. I don't get to judge. Thank God there's no judgment here. Just come in and take a seat and let us help you. If you're hurting and your life is over, great, great. It's like, you know, but we want to defend everything. I'm so glad I couldn't talk when I first got here. I would have alienated everybody, I'm sure. But, you know, I've been able to make amends to my mom. My son got kicked out of kindergarten. He ended up at a Catholic school with that Sister Sheila sponsor. And guess what they have every year? And where I was on my amends list and I couldn't make amends. I was a carny for a while. I know, I joined the circus. I had a shooting gallery. I was mean. People would win little teddy bears. Little boys would knock the three things down they have to knock down. And I would just be in a bad mood drinking my tequila and I'd pop one up. And they'd say, I want a test. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. So I wasn't very nice drinking tequila and being a... having my joint. I didn't want to get rid of my flash that night. And so there are a few little things that happened with Mace and some other things. And the fathers would always come and it got bad. And that's... so it was on my list. But how, you know, these are all like little kids. Three shots for a quarter, right? They have a school carnival every year at that school my son went to. And I went, oh, here it is. The universe showed me a way. So from kindergarten through eighth grade, there's probably people in this room I hit up for, you know, fundraiser money, and I bought ride tickets, and I worked whatever they needed me to work that weekend. Whatever you want, I'll do it. And by the time my son graduated from the eighth grade from that Catholic school, I knew it was over. It felt good. I could walk away. It was done. And there's been so many amends like that. If you're just willing, and I've done so many inventories with people I sponsor, and I just... it's so beautiful to watch the light go on just as they're sitting in your chair. It's like a transformative evening. And it's like, I love that. I love watching your light go on. Because it brightens my light. It shines on me. And am I the luckiest or not? I am. My mama is 94, just turned 94. And she now lives in Wisconsin, so I'm from the state of cheese. It's a little more dignified. Then Iowa had pigs and corn. But I had a great upbringing. And my mom was talking about the time, and it was sadness. She was being sad about it. She was talking about the time that Frank, her dad, my dad, her husband, had said no to her with helping one of her children. And I didn't quite know what she was talking about, and there were a lot of people around. So the next day I sat down with my mom, and here's another amends. 38 years later, this happened last summer. I said, Mom, what were you talking about of when Dad said that you couldn't help one of your children? One of us? What was that about? She said, your father never said no to me with helping you guys out, ever, except August 20th, 1975, when I called my mom, Colette, with my broken jaw, when she didn't know if her second daughter was going to be okay, because she didn't know what hospital they had called from to tell them what had happened to her. So when I called her that day, my mother answered the phone, and I'm sure she put her hand over the receiver, and my dad was there, and I'm sure she said to him, Frank, it's Sharon, can we help her? And my father told her no. So my mom said to me, we can't help you anymore. Go to the Salvation Army. And it was that day. It was that day. And 38 years later, my mother got to talk about that day. If you don't think we create damage out there, stick around. Stick around. Now I get to be part of the force for good. Now I get to be God's kid. Now I get to be somebody that tries to make the world a more positive, better place. I don't get it out there. I really don't. I don't know about you, but my humor's still a little off from the earth people out there. I don't really tell the jokes in the office because they're always a little bit weird. They kind of look at me like, oh, that's a little dark, isn't it? You know, it's, don't do that anymore. I've got my head down. I work. I'm friendly. I know what I need to do. I can close my door and talk to you and have a laugh. As soon as I have a laugh, the laughter is so great. My first sponsor, Janet, the crazy one, laughed like a duck. But I could always hear her in the room. And when I heard her laugh, which was whack, 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 I would like just go, oh, my gosh, my sponsor, me with a broken jaw and all the crooked face, right? I would think, and she would look at me and go, but I always felt safe when I heard her in the room. And I didn't realize I had been running around in my life not feeling safe. So I had, after my divorce, raising my son, working, I had to get a better job because I needed more money. And so I got a better job in the legal field. And I had been a convicted felon for sales and possession in Bogalusa, Louisiana. But that got expunged because of one of the girls that got sober from New Orleans, one of my cronies. Ended up selling her bar to the bar. She passed the bar, and she got me pardoned. So I work in a big law firm, and I had to get a better job, and I was going about my life, and I met Casey. And many of you knew Casey, and many of you golfed with Casey, and many of you came away better golfers, probably, because you golfed with Casey. And so we were together 24 years, and we really had a love affair with each other and with God and with Alcoholics Anonymous. And gosh, it was just 3 years ago he's passed away. And he went out with joy, and he went out with peace, and he went out with so much love. What has been in my house for many, 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 many years is love. And I can't explain to you the wonderful, calm feeling I had with helping him transition. I miss him every day. My heart will never be the same. But he left me lots of love. And that's what we do with each other. We love each other. We love each other. We give each other the best. Nobody said, I'll do the work for you. They said, here's the tools. Let me show you how I did them. Now you do them. Build those spiritual muscles, kids, so you can help others. And the biggest gift I've had, been given to me, is a spiritual awakening in Alcoholics Anonymous so that I can take it out in the world and help other God's kids get things done. Thanks for having me. I would just repeat the question. Okay. So it's now time for the question answer period. We got a hand back there, gentlemen. Yes, you. I can't hear you. All right, I'm missing all this. What's happening? Okay, you were in a meeting and you didn't feel wanted and you felt threatened.
I felt threatened.
Okay.
It wasn't like that.
Right. That's just kind of the basic premise of the question. Is you left the meeting, you didn't feel, you felt threatened and not wanted at the meeting.
Right.
So you left. You know, I've left one meeting in my whole life that I can remember, and it was because of the same reason. And actually, it was a vote. It was four of us there, and it was 3-1, stay or go, and I wanted to stay. I didn't mind the guns and the knives, kind of made me feel at home, but, you know, there's a lot of meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a lot of places to go be of service, and that's what it's about. When you've worked, you know, when you're here and you've worked in some steps, you've got to pass that along. You can't pass that along where they are. Go where the newcomers are. Just go somewhere else. Just go. I mean, there's a lot of meetings here. That's, I mean, the only time I ever left a meeting was that, because everybody else felt threatened. But, you know, and people I sponsor don't have people they sponsor. I said, go to the meetings where the newcomers are. So many meetings here. We're in the, you know, apex of Alcoholics Anonymous in the world. So I hope that helped. You're welcome. Are we all that spiritual tonight? Oh, my God, I'm not. I might have to ask me a question. How'd you get along with your family? Oh, okay. Over here, John.
We talked about judgment. And I kind of focused on that. I find myself judging a lot of people, and I get I'm more aware of it all the time. When did you reach a point in your sobriety when you stop judging people, if you did ever? And how are you aware of it when it happens more so?
When did I stop judging people, and how am I aware of it when it happens? Well, when I shift into any defect of character, when I'm actually all feeling good and prayed up, and I get on the road and somebody cuts me off, you know, I don't like that. I feel the difference today. It's like, you know, turning my face to the sun, turning my face to the dark. I've had an awakening. I've asked the defects of character. I've asked God to remove the ones which are in the way between me and him, and you know what? It's all of them. It's not just, oh, that must be useful. It's still there. That's such a cop-out for me. It's all of them. So, you know, I work with a lot of people. We talk a lot. There's a lot of exchange of information and energy and step work and meetings. So I hear myself. I'm on to me. And I like to stay on to me. And when I am in judgment, I am not in forgiveness. And that's been the biggest gift in my life, is to forgive absolutely everybody. Absolutely everybody. Thanks, John. Good question. Woman and then you. How's that? Okay.
Thank you for your
question.
Can you talk a little bit about how you've dealt with fear through the years?
How I've dealt with fear through the years. My best friend, fear, slides right up to me in the middle of the night. I don't even know it's sleeping next to me. It wakes me up and goes, we got to talk about this, you know. And I get into fear when I'm sometimes moving too fast through life, or there's a lot I have to do. It's like if I dropped over dead, everything would be fine. I have to find a bigger God. I have to find a bigger God. If I am thinking, I can handle this little fear over here, and you can have the rest, God, it's not going well. It's not going well for me. It makes me extremely tired. Fear makes me so tired. And the last 3 years going through grief, it's been very hard to kind of separate fear from grief, in a sense, because I have smart feet. You guys taught me how to have smart feet. And my feet have walked through so much because my head doesn't want to. I'll cry all the way to work sometimes. I'll have that panic, fight or flight going on. Is that grief? Am I afraid? Whatever. Just shut up and go to work. You know, put a CD in my car so I can listen to somebody else talking about program for a while. Play some music. I've been playing happy New Orleans, Dixieland music in my car. And if you see me on the road, I'm smiling. Might even be singing, you know? But fear is exhausting, and I got to give it all to God. And it takes some skinning my knees. I have to get out the crampons and the ice axe and the oxygen, and we're going to tackle this, right? And then my sponsor says, it's just a bump in the road, Sharon. You can lay down and roll over it. Take off all that stuff. You're not climbing Mount Everest, you know? That's me, right to the max. So, you know, right-size me, right-size the fear, bigger God. But it takes a little skinning of knees sometimes. It takes putting my foot in my mouth sometimes. It takes feeling so exhausted I can't even go out into the day sometimes. And I have to see what's going on. I'm taking this part here. So, thank you. Good question.
Yeah, the person that had 28 years,
How did you help her?
Oh, Jenny. Yeah. Jenny. 21 years to 21 days. Yeah. Yep. Oh, my God. It was. I remember standing at the airport with my baby she had not met in the stroller, my little Aprica, picking her up at customs. And I'm standing next to one of her other girls she sponsored that didn't go to my meeting, but I knew her. And she said, you know, Jenny's got 21 days. I went, yeah, she's got 21 years. No, no, Jenny's got 21 days. I was like, and then she comes through, you know, and hi, it's my baby, here's some flowers, how are you? And I drove her home and she told me. She was mortified, mortified. It was, she knew she had to come home because Father Terry had gone to Rome and then he went to Paris, thought he would see Jenny. They had coffee. And she told him, and he said, Jenny, come home. It's another one of those little God incidences, you know. It's another one of those things, because she came back. She went to another group for a while, got a different sponsor. She finally drank for a while, came back, got Clancy as a sponsor. I got to see her once or twice a week. We got to be friends. She got to make her amends to me. I had to stand there and just take it. I just wanted to say, Jenny, it doesn't matter. I love you. But I let her because I had to honor her. And was it 3 Easters ago? She just stood up from her computer, said it was hot, and dropped dead. But she had 11 years of sobriety. And everybody that knew her loved her and supported her. But she had her own demons. We have our own demons. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you. I got that one.
Thank you, Sharon. Do you ever find yourself dreading the solution? Like,
are there
days
when
it just seems easier to live with the problem?
How come my babies are laughing? Dreading the solution, easier to live with the problem. Well, I mean, if you invite them in and you buy them dinner and you have candlelight, you know, Mr. Problem, I'm just using it as an analogy, I'm not dating. You know, Mr. Problem becomes part of your life. And then, you know, then you go to bed thinking about the problem and the problem's right here. And you, you know, you woo the problem, you bring them along, take a trip, you pack a suitcase for them, Mr. Problem. You know, it's like pretty soon it becomes part of your life and then you're limping. You're spiritually limping. And I can't run down the street. I'm limping because this fear and this unwillingness, you know, it's the monkeys with that. It's like, now this is something Jenny told me. She said, Sharon, this is, I don't know, it was about 5 years sober. She said, you remind me of that girl that walks around here in the meeting, and she let me look in her hand one day, and she holds this thing in her hand, and she's kind of crazy, and she puts it in her pocket, and she takes it out and holds it, and one day she trusted me and let me look in her hand, and it was like an old dried up cat turd or something. It was a turd, you know, and I just thought, wow, I remind you of that girl with the turd, right? I remember I had a moment of brilliance. I don't have a lot, because, you know, it's like lightning, it's gone, but I had a moment of brilliance, and I looked at her, and I said, I know, but it's my turd, and it belongs to me. So that's me and turd until I'm, you know, until it smells bad, and I'm going to get rid of it. Or you tell one of the girls you sponsor, see, that's my fail-safe, to do something that you know will work because you've been there, and you go, aha, I can't tell her to do that if I'm not doing that anymore. Like, you know, it's thank God for the in and the out, the yin and the yang, all of it. You know, it's just all about being a link in the chain, part of the force for good. And I get a little tilted every now and then, and somebody will say, hey, you're a little off. And I have to be willing to listen. I have to be humbled by my humility sometimes, you know. So, let's say humbled by my humiliation. That works better. See ya. Very sweet to ask that. So you asked if I get tired of traveling a lot for being part of the force for good in the world, right? Yeah. Yeah, I work a real job. I'm not retired. I don't, you know, I didn't write my book and I'm living on that, those proceeds. You know, I'm working a real job. I'm out in the world. I was a big girl and bought a house two years ago, so I've got this big mortgage. And it's like, did they look at my age? They gave me a 30-year mortgage. I think it's a big joke, you know. It's like... So, you know, equity, you know, so yeah, I got to show up at work, and they don't say to me, because they don't know. They don't know I do any of this. Thank God I've had smart sponsors that says, you just work when you're there. Oh, Sharon, how was your weekend? I know you're a little tired. Why don't you go, go to your car and take a nap for a while, because we know you just gave so much this weekend. So you can come and do your financial work for the firm later. We'll be okay. Don't worry about it, you know. No. Now, it's a privilege. It's a privilege to wake up sober every morning. And I'm usually fine when I get there. And usually I'm nice to people. I almost blew it once, though. I try to be nice to people. I really am nice to people on the plane. But this one guy was really getting to me. And they weren't doing everything right, the airlines. And we were delayed and this and that and another plane. And I'd take everything off and this... guy that was like in his 30s. Now, if I would have been a kid, I would have been probably nicer because, you know, maybe. And so I almost said to him, you know, I almost said not very nice things to him, like, shut up, I don't want to hear this anymore. I'm meditating. Can you just leave me alone with God or something, right? Because he's going on and on about his family and everything. And then he said to me, I just kind of looked over at him ready to kind of go. And he said, I'm going to Disneyland for the first time in my life. And it was like, he turned into this little kid in front of my face. And I almost took away his, like, Disneyland fun. You know, what I felt bad for a long time, I would have, you know? Yeah. So I have to behave out in the world. Nobody really knows what goes on in there. And I entertain myself. I really do. But, yes, it's hard. And that doesn't matter because hard makes muscles. It's if I get into it and think, oh, I should do this or I should do that. No, just show up, do your best, and meet some people. And we're about saving lives here, guys. We're about saving lives. It's serious stuff. But we have an awful lot of fun doing it. We have an awful lot of fun with each other. So, that's it.